You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I'm Tamar Yonah, and we will be updating you on the show today about what's going on in Israel and what to expect this week in Israel. Wow, it's been a long time since I've been at the mic. We had the Passover vacation and a holiday, I should say, which was a vacation from the radio, time for most of the staff of Israel News Talk Radio to be with their families. But we are going to be giving you the news on this program today. And I do want to say that just a few hours before the show, around 3 hours or so, there was a barrage of rocket fire into Israel's northern border, up to 50 rocket attacks on Israel in the north from the Hezbollah, and another attack in the south of Israel, this from Alan Silver News. And by the way, Alan Silver will be joining us on the show today a little bit later. In the south of Israel, there was an attack also from the Hamas on Israel. And this is an announcement from the Eshkol Regional Council, which is located in southern Israel. A short time ago, a barrage of rockets was fired into the Kerem Shalom area. Now, the Kerem Shalom area, for anyone who doesn't know, is located on the Israeli side of the southeastern border with Gaza. And kind of picture that to the west is Gaza, and to the south is Egypt. That's where the border is with Israel, and this was close to the tip between Egypt and Gaza. So with this rocket attack on Israel, and a number of rockets, they say here, exploded in an open area near a military installation, and unfortunately, we are getting reports that there were casualties. Kerem Shalom was, as I said, recently attacked by a mortar barrage, one person evacuated by helicopter, 10 injured in varying degrees. The victims are from the 401st Shaked Battalion in the assembly area in Kerem Shalom. The border crossing is closed to the passage of trucks. Our hearts and thoughts are with the families and those that were injured. We are praying for a full and speedy recovery. We hope they will get that. Let me go into what we are going to be expecting this week as well. We're going to have an interview in just a minute or two, and then we're going to go on and get more news, what's happening in Israel and the negotiations with the Hamas about a ceasefire, etc., what's happening with the government. All that will be with Alan Silver after this interview that I do. But first, I do want to announce that this show is being broadcast live. If you're listening on Sunday between 4 to 5 p.m. Israel time, Sunday on the 5th of May, and if you're listening to the show at any other time, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of this show. So Sunday night this week ushers in Yom HaShoah, or Holocaust Martyrs and Heroes Remembrance Day. Let me tell you a little bit about it. And I'm reading this from the Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum's website. It's officially the national day of commemoration in Israel, on which 6 million Jews were murdered in the Holocaust, and they are memorialized. I just want to say that these 6 million Jews that were killed, that were murdered, did not get any humanitarian aid from anyone. It's a solemn day, Yom HaShoah, beginning at sunset on the 27th of the Hebrew month of Nisan and ending the following evening according to the traditional Jewish custom, which makes one day. Places of entertainment in Israel are closed, meaning like movie theaters, any type of entertainment, even restaurants, and memorial ceremonies are held throughout the country. The central ceremonies in the evening and the following morning are held at Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum here in Jerusalem, and these ceremonies are broadcast live on television and radio, marking the start of the day in the presence of the President of the State of Israel and the Prime Minister, dignitaries, survivors of the Holocaust. There's not that many left today. Children of survivors I am one of those, and their families gather together with the general public to take part in the memorial ceremony at Yad Vashem, in which six torches representing the 6 million murdered Jews are lit. The following morning, and for this year of 2024, that will be Monday morning, the following morning, the ceremony at Yad Vashem begins with the sounding of a siren for 2 minutes throughout the entire country. For the duration of that 2 minute sounding, work is halted. People walking in the streets stop and stand still. Cars that are driving on the road pull off to the side of the road. Some even stay in the middle of the road as all traffic basically stops. And everybody stands at silent attention in reverence to the victims of the Holocaust. Afterward, the focus of the ceremony at Yad Vashem is the laying of wreaths at the foot of the six torches by dignitaries and the representatives of survivor groups and other institutions. Other sites of remembrance in Israel, such as the Ghetto Fighters Kibbutz and Kibbutz Yad Mordechai, also host memorial ceremonies, as do schools, military bases, municipalities, and places of work. Throughout the day, both the television and radio broadcast programs about the Holocaust. In other words, if you were in Israel and you turned on the television, all Israeli stations will cancel their regular programming and will be having programs instead on Holocaust education, showing Holocaust or movies about the Holocaust, some of them Hollywood movies that were made about World War II, etc. In recent years, other countries and Jewish communities have adopted Yom HaShoah, the 27th of the Hebrew month of Nisan, to mark their own day of memorial for the victims of the Holocaust. So again, Holocaust Martyrs and Heroes Remembrance Day 2024 begins with the State of Israel's opening ceremony held at Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. That's tonight on Sunday, on May 5th at 8 p.m. And it ends the following day on Monday evening, May 6th. May all of our brothers and sisters who were murdered in the Holocaust be remembered for a blessing. Today in Israel, we are fighting a continuation of these attacks and atrocities on the Jewish people. Just about 7 months ago now, on October 7th, Nazi Hamas ISIS ideological Arabs broke a ceasefire with Israel. On October 6th, there was a ceasefire. On October 7th, they broke it and they invaded our country on a murderous killing, raping, torturing, and kidnapping spree. Over 130 kidnapped innocent men, women, and children are still being held captive there with no visitation by the Red Cross or any other humanitarian organization. We do not know who is still alive, who is being raped, who is being tortured, what the general fate is of these human beings. Yes, these Jews are human beings. Yet Israel is being told by the world to fuel and feed these Hamas, Nazi, ISIS savages, to keep them and their supporters alive, to let the Hamas see the day where they will once again try to do the same attacks and rapes and tortures and burning people alive and killing them and murdering them and kidnapping them over and over and over again. Their words. In my eyes, I see the Almighty in heaven making people around the world choose sides. Are you for this evil? Are you marching on college campuses, waving a Palestinian flag, taking down the American flag and raising the Palestinian flag? Are you for God and morality and goodness, or are you for this evil? We see what's going on college campuses today in America, in Europe, around the world. And these quote-unquote students will next year and in the coming years ahead be in government, they'll be in jobs of power and influence, and it does not bode well for the Jewish people in these host countries where they are living. It is time to come home, to come home to Israel. If there is a world war, which prophets say there will be, we Jews know that we are much safer here in Israel. Here in Israel, we are prepared, and we have a promise from God that He will protect us. Our Jewish brothers and sisters still overseas are not prepared in any way to protect themselves. They are a minority. They are not trained in self-defense. They do not own guns like we do here in Israel. We know that we will be safest here in Israel. We are the majority. And Israel, we know, will be the future of the Jewish people. Not New York, not Paris, not London, not Melbourne, etc., etc. I want to play an interview I just did before this program with Josh Wander. He used to be a show host here at Israel News Talk Radio. He had a show that was on the topic of Aliyah, or moving to Israel. He was once a prepper from the United States. I think he was on that television show, Doomsday Preppers. And he left the United States eventually. He got smart. He moved to Israel. And he continues on here as a Jewish activist for Aliyah. He moved to Israel, and I'd like to play that interview for you here as he had a conference this last week for Emergency Aliyah. Okay, we have Josh Wander joining us now. He is an Aliyah activist. Aliyah means to basically move to Israel, to go up. And when a person, when a Jew makes Aliyah, when he comes to move to Israel, he's spiritually going up. He was also the co-organizer of the Emergency Aliyah Conference that took place in Jerusalem last week on May 1st. And he's here joining us to tell us about who was there, what was talked about, and if anything was decided in order to help Jewish people who have not yet moved to Israel or made Aliyah. So, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tamar. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. So this happened on last Wednesday. How many people showed up approximately?
So in person, we had approximately 100 people over the night. Mm-hmm. But we had lots and lots of people, perhaps even in the thousands, viewing online remotely. And that was our goal, to try to get the messages out to as many people as possible. It wasn't a matter of how many people were actually in the room, but how much influence those people have and how many people we're able to get the message out to abroad. So we have a link that hopefully you'll be posting of the conference, and we're trying to get to disseminate that as much as we can.
Right. And that conference was live streamed over YouTube, and we'll try to put that up as you just said. And you do want to reach, you want more people online from all over the world watching rather than people who are already here and have already made Aliyah. You had some very interesting guest speakers, including Jonathan Pollard. And so what was the setup? How did people came up and just said, we have to help our brothers and sisters who have not yet moved here to be able to come and come as easily as possible? What exactly happened there?
So the conference were actually people that it consisted mostly of people that already made Aliyah, that are here, that are active in Aliyah efforts. And it was sort of it's the second conference that we've had of this type. We hope it'll be the last one. We hope that we won't have to have any more and all the Jews will come home. But it's meant to be a more of a brainstorming session where we all discussed what has been successful in the past with Aliyah efforts, and what have been things that have been less successful, and different strategies that we can use in the future to try to encourage more of our brothers and sisters to come home.
So what do you think is the biggest thing that's preventing Jews from looking into moving to Israel? Do you think that they're in denial, or do you think that they want to come but they're unable to?
So one of the panelists, we had a number of panels, and one of the panelists was a social media influencer by the name of Hila Oz. He's amazing. I recommend everybody looks her up. Hila mentioned that there is the first person in the Bible that is somewhat of a derogatory term, or is put down a little bit by the Torah, is Noah, is the one that Noah is the one that was said, that is said of him that he was a tzaddik bidoro. He was a righteous person in his generation. And it explains that it was in his generation he was a righteous person. But if he was put in the generation of Abraham or some other great, great individuals, he wouldn't have been such a righteous person. And what is meant is, why is that? Because he was not successful in getting out to the masses and influencing everybody. And it's interesting, she points out, that Noach, the word Noach, his name, means comfort. And I spoke on Shabbat, and I expanded upon this point, and I said that there's two things going on simultaneously here. There's the Noach that's happening of the Jews abroad. The Jews abroad are very comfortable. Even though they're getting shaken up, they're very, very comfortable where they are. And we have to wake them up and try to tell them that they have to get out of this slumber. And then there are the Jews that are here, half the Jewish people in Israel, that are also Noach. They're in a state of complacency where they don't understand the danger that our brothers and sisters are in around the world. And we are also not doing our part in order to trying to influence them to come home.
It's been my experience or my observations that most of the Jews who are still have not moved here, it usually, number one, it's usually the more Torah observant Jews who have Israel on their mind. And those that might want to come, they're thinking that, you know, I don't know the language. I'm in my 40s. My kids are in school. They have a zillion reasons why it's very difficult for them just to pick up and move on. And I'm remembering my father, and this is the eve of Yom HaShoah, of Holocaust Remembrance Day, this week in Israel, and how even the Jews there, when they saw the Nazis and what they were doing, my father was living in Poland at that time. And they said, oh, you know, the war, the Americans are going to come in and, you know, the allies and the war will be over in 6 months. And what, you're going to give up your whole factory that you've built here, and you're going to just pick up and go to the land of Israel, which was under British occupation at that time. So people always have excuses, and they're always very hopeful that this too shall pass and they'll be able to survive it and they won't have to uproot. And so my observations is, unless the Jewish people know that, oh, I have a job waiting for me there, or I speak the language or something, that they just choose to try to ride it out. What do you think?
So I never understood, as I was growing up, how Jews remained in Europe between 1933 and 1939. 1933 was the year that Hitler rose to power. 1939 was the beginning of the Holocaust. They had a number of years that they could have picked up and escaped. And you're absolutely right, Tamar. That's exactly the attitude that most European Jews had, that this too will pass. And I witnessed this firsthand, and I only began to understand it when I started going back and forth to Ukraine during the war, trying to help the Jews of Ukraine. And I saw bombs falling on cities, and the Jews there saying, it's okay, next week it'll be better, this will be over, it's not a big deal, and completely oblivious to what's going on around them. And I see that this is a serious issue. I think it's the same issue that's happening, as we mentioned, about comfort today in the United States. There are many people that use the excuses that you just mentioned as reasons for not coming. And I think if they realized the dire situation that they're in, then that would change them, their views drastically. And that's one of the reasons and one of the lessons that we came out with from this conference is that we need to immediately send groups of what we're calling Israeli commando squads, groups of Israelis that are willing to speak on campuses, willing to speak in communities, and start to go out with a major campaign to push for Aliyah now. And as of next week for Yom HaTzma'ut, this is a scoop. It hasn't been released to the media yet.
Just a second. Yom HaTzma'ut means Israel Independence Day, for those who don't know Hebrew.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Correct. We're going to be sending out our first team of Israeli commando to go out and to start to speak in the and present this Aliyah Now message to the college students, to the communities, that it's time to leave now.
And so was that basically the summation of the conference that you had last week, that you're going to work on more the college students because they have less roots stuck into the ground outside of Israel, you know, with their families and children, et cetera, and jobs?
Well, you'll see that when you click on the link for the conference, you'll see that the conference was many hours long. It had many, many speakers, many panelists. And, you know, we have two Jews and three opinions. Everybody has their different opinions of what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and how we should move forward from here. There were certain things that we all agreed upon. And one of them is the one you just mentioned, which is that we have to start working on this. The students now are being given a very clear message by their co-students in school, the student bodies, which have risen up in even the best Ivy League schools and have shown that Hamas, the pro-Hamas groups, are the ones that are controlling this scene on college
campuses.
And their
professors.
And their professors. But just to be clear, these college students, this is where it always starts in colleges. These college students are the ones that are going to be graduating next year and the year after, and they're going to be going into media, they're going to be going into government, and they're going to be running the show in a couple of years, these same students that are protesting now and taking over the campuses. So this is just a glimpse of what we're expecting in the coming months and years of what's going to happen to the United States. It is literally imploding before our eyes. Again, most people are oblivious to it. They choose to ignore it, but we have to do our share to go out and explain to them, educate them, beg them to come home right away while they can.
Are you doing all of this in cooperation with Nefesh B'Nefesh, which is an organization that handles candidates from the United States and England or the UK that want to come and move to Israel?
So Nefesh B'Nefesh had one of their senior staffers speak at our conference. But they are not, directly, sponsoring us. Nefesh B'Nefesh, just to be clear, has the contract, with the Jewish Agency for all of North America. So anyone that's in North America, any Jew that wants to return home has to go through Nefesh B'Nefesh in order to fill out the paperwork and in order to start the Aliyah process. That having been said, I've said this many times before, that Nefesh B'Nefesh and other similar organizations deal more with the how you should make Aliyah. They go through the bureaucracy and the different loopholes that you need work that you need to fill out and different forms that you need to have in order to make Aliyah. But they don't deal as much with the why, with the educational part. And that is sorely lacking, unfortunately, especially on college campuses, especially in community, Jewish communities around the United States, where people don't understand why they should be making Aliyah. And until they get past the why stage, they're never going to get to the how stage where they're going to be filling out paperwork for Aliyah.
I hear. So each organization has its niche, you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully we're all on we have the same goals. It's just a question of different ways of getting to people. And it's very important to understand that, The mainstream, I have to be very diplomatic here, the mainstream organizations that are out there are somewhat restricted or very, very, very careful about different things, different ideas that we have, because the whole existence of our organization is in order to try to figure out how to work outside of the box and how to think things differently than have been done for the past 70, 80 years here in the country. And that is something that sort of is thrown in the face of those mainstream organizations, which are the ones that are continuing to do the same thing they've done for all these decades. And in my opinion, they've failed. I mean, they've been somewhat successful, but it's a drop in the ocean as far as how much the Aliyah, how much Jews have come back. We're talking thousands of Jews that they're very proud. Actually, the Nefesh B'Nefesh representative spoke about how proud Nefesh B'Nefesh is that they have brought back 80,000 Jews to Israel, which is a wonderful number. But if you look at how many Jews are in North America, we're talking many, many millions of Jews, and 80,000 is, like I said, a drop in the bucket.
Right. It's a hard thing to do. You have to be really motivated. We all learned from the Torah that only 1/5 of the Jewish people left Egypt when we were slaves there. That's 80% stayed behind. Only 20% came. And who are those 20%? Those 20%, in my opinion, were the Jews who said, I don't know if it's going to be good for me in the land of Israel, or if it's going to be hard for me, if it's going to be easy or whatever. All I know is I want to entwine my destiny with the destiny of my nation, with the Jewish people. I want to be home. I want to do what God wants me to do. And that's what's important to me. And with no promises of a good job or speaking the language or, you know, what kind of size house will I get, et cetera? Where will I live, et cetera? There's just people who said, I want to be with the Jewish people. I want to be in my land. I want to listen to God and be home. And those were the people who gave up everything because they had higher ideals.
So we just went through Pesach, through Passover, and the splitting of the Red Sea. So we have a tradition that the Red Sea, as the Jews were stuck on the coast, and the Egyptian army was coming up behind them, the sea did not split until one individual named Nachshon ben Aminadav, he decided that he's going to go in, and he went into the water, and it kept going up and up until up to his nose until it was, and then finally it split. We need people that are people of action, that are willing to go for it. That's the idea behind this commando squad. People that are willing to go into the fire, into the U.S. college campuses, and express our opinions openly and proudly. The second thing is that we had a fight. We had a battle with Cheshbon, and Cheshbon is a place, but it's also a,
it You're
also
talking about
means,
with Moses, not at the conference, the
yes,
Jewish people
yes,
when
yes,
we were
yes,
going into the land of Israel. Yeah.
That's correct. We had a battle with Cheshbon, and Cheshbon also means a calculation. So one of the things that I think I heard from Rabbi Shlomo Katz, I don't know exactly who is quoting it from, but that's one of the things that's necessary before one makes Aliyah is to go to a battle with Cheshbon, with your calculations. It's very easy to sit back and with a piece, you know, pencil and paper, and start trying to figure out, you know, like you said, I don't speak the language. I have kids that are in school here. I have elderly parents. I don't have a job, but this and come up with all the cons, the reasons why I should not make Aliyah. But that's exactly what God expects us to fight. When he told Abraham Avinu, lech lecha, that you have to leave your land and you have to go, he didn't come up with all these reasonings, but it's better in Haran, and we have a job here, and we're doing great, and we have a sustenance here, and we have a nice house, a nice tent. We have everything that's going for us. You know, why should we get up and go? Or even when he was told to go, God didn't tell him when to go. He could, maybe he means in another 10 years when his teenage kids are already out of school. He got up immediately and he left because God told him to. And that's the fight. That's the battle that each and every one of us has to have, where we have to conquer the cheshbon in us, the calculations, where we try to find out all the reasons why we should not make Aliyah. And we have to understand, again, if you put it into perspective, Tamar, and you understand what we believe to be a dangerous situation, that's why we call it an emergency Aliyah conference, because we believe that the Jews that are abroad are actually in danger. As you correctly said, 20% made it out of Egypt. Most of them didn't. I always tell people that I'm not a follower of Avram Fried. Avram Fried is a famous Jewish singer. He has a song, No Jew Will Be Left Behind. So I said, I don't believe that no Jew will be left behind. One of the fundamentals of our faith is the idea that God has given every human being free will. And I have no reason to believe that in the end of days, that free will is going to be suspended for some reason. And people are going to be forced against their will to come to Israel. Jews that want to come are going to come, and the ones that don't, won't. And unfortunately, we see what happened to the Jews that didn't in Egypt. They perished in the plague of darkness. We hope that we will be able to convince our brothers and sisters to come home and not have to go through all those trials and tribulations.
Right. And I just want to mention here that the same reasons that Jews today are saying that they can't come, their kids are in school, this, that, their job, whatever it is, were the same things that happened to our grandparents or our parents in pre-Nazi infiltration Europe. The same thing. They also had jobs and schools and kids and everything. It's the same thing. But look what happened to them in the end, because they didn't take those signals, which we have in a vast supply of them in our past history of anti-Semitism and what happened to us in Spain and in England, etc. And I just want to say a word also for all of our brothers and sisters who are thinking, well, I've got my finger on the pulse. If anything happens, I'm on the next plane. But you need to realize we saw this with COVID. We saw this with 9/11. We saw this with the war here in Israel just a few months ago, where airports closed down, and it could be very easy that even rescue flights from El Al will not be able to arrive in New York or Los Angeles or Melbourne or wherever, because maybe these countries will say Israel is going against human rights and we're not letting any of their airlines land here. We're going to close off the El Al terminals. They're not welcome anymore. You don't know if you're going to be able to get out or not. You can't live with your finger on the pulse, because that pulse could be in an instant and then it's too late. And when it's too late, it's too late. Josh Wander.
So I think, Tamar, yes. I think that God is giving us signals. He's sending us messages. And the messages are getting stronger and stronger. The messages started, as you said, with Corona, where Jews that wanted to come to Israel as tourists were restricted from doing so. If you came on Aliyah, if you committed yourself to living here, you were allowed to come in. But if you came as a tourist, you weren't allowed to come in. That was the first level. And a lot of people were shocked by that they couldn't come here as tourists, because God doesn't want Jews to be tourists here. He wants them to reside here. And then we just saw when Iran attacked us, the next level, where even if you're, and it doesn't matter who you are, you could be an Israeli general. And once the airspace is closed, you can't even fly into Jordan and hike over the desert. That's it. When the airspace is closed, it's closed to everyone. No one that is outside can get in. Actually, Avi Avila, one of the speakers, and myself, whenever we go to abroad and we go on these speaking tours, one of the biggest fears, and our wives both mention it every time, is what happens if we get stuck there? You know, we're going abroad. We're literally risking. We believe we're risking our lives to do this holy work, because we don't know when the gates are going to close, and we don't know which side we're going to be on. This is something that's very concerning to us, and we do it because of our love for the Jewish people, that we want to get as many people home as quickly as possible while they can.
Right. Right.
You know, we have, I just wanted to say, you know about my organization, Bring Them Home. So every year, .org.il, it has nothing to do with the hostages, but I had it before, but we've been adding domains every year onto that point to the same site. So last year we added itstimetoleave.com, and this year we have it getoutnow.org. They all lead to the same place, but we're trying to show Jews that it's getting more and more severe. It's getting serious. The messages from God are becoming more and more clear as the country starts to fall apart and implode. It's another empire that is falling. And the Jews, like you said, if we just learn anything from Jewish history, unfortunately, we always learn it too late, our lesson. But if we learn anything from Jewish history, it's always the Jews that are to blame in the end whenever things go south in a country. And I don't believe that America is going to be any different.
Right. And, you know, I always say also that God is not going to send you a telegram saying, dear Mr. and Mrs. Goldstein, it's time to leave and it's time to come home. It's literally writing on the wall, just like you had said, kill the Jews. Death to Zionists, from the river to the sea. I mean, that's your telegram that Hashem is sending you, that God is sending you. It's literally written on the walls. Take notice, my Jewish brothers and sisters, and come home. And again, getoutnow.org. And we're going to link also to the conference for the on the page where the show is podcasted. Josh Wander, thank you so much for coming on, and God bless you and keep you all safe. We're going to be going overseas to try to help our brothers and sisters come home to Israel. God bless you.
Amen. Thank you, Tamar.
Okay, and that was an interview with Josh Wander. We're going to put those links on the page where this show is podcasted. I did want to make an announcement, and that is that a news report that I read out earlier in the show about casualties on the Gazan border in Israel, that there is a correction for that news report. The numbers of casualties that I read out are not confirmed. And we ask that you disregard any of the numbers that we have been given until an official announcement comes out from the government and from the security forces. All right. And saying that, I want to introduce now to the show my guest, Alan Silver from Alan Silver News. Again, I want to remind you all, if you'd like to get news reports in English that is breaking news, you can join his WhatsApp group. You can contact me. And or if I'm able to, I will leave a link on the page where the show is podcasted where you can have a join link to join his news group and get that news. So welcome to the show, Alan.
Hi, good afternoon.
I hope it's a good afternoon. I really, really hope so, because as I was telling our listeners this morning, bombarded by the way, a correction on that number too. I said at least 50. Now it's up to 65. Or even more.
There's more now.
Yeah, 80. Right. Launches against Israel in the north and the northern border. I do want to let everybody know, though, that you know, when we hear about casualties, also in the south, most of these casualties, most, not all, are going to probably be from our security forces, from our soldiers, etc. Because nobody's talking about it, but Israel has around 100,000 homeless people, displaced people, that are staying in hotels that put up, paid for by the government, and put up in other places. Some staying with families, some renting apartments on their own, someplace else, because they cannot live in their homes because they are now deemed closed military zones because of its proximity to the Hezbollah and or the Hamas terrorist organizations, where they are constantly launching rocket fire or tank anti-tank missiles. You don't even get a warning for those. They come so quickly and so close that people cannot stay at home. They were forced to leave their homes. And so, Alan, with all of that background and with all the news that's going on, where would you like to start? I know that you are like the newsman of breaking news, and where do you want to start?
I don't know. I think we should maybe start from the very beginning, I believe, Tamara, and that is on the October 7th last year. There was a plan by the Arab
apparatus, Iran.
I'm talking?
Yes, yeah. I'm saying, like, Iran, there was this whole plan of a multi-front attack on Israel.
By terrorists, all financed by Iran. Iran had its plan to take over, to destroy Israel and take over. But they wanted to do it by nuclear, but they found another plan of making all their proxies subtly, like, useful. They've financed them all the years, and now they decided they're going to just use the influence and whatever they've done over the years. And so they plan to do a multiple-pronged attack, which, if it had gone off as was planned, it could possibly have been close to the destruction of Israel. It was unbelievable. We had a lot of Sierra de Shmaya, God's help, in it, and somehow Hamas jumped the gun and attacked us on a very holy day of Shabbos, as well as on Simchat Torah, a Jewish holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was caught unaware. It's like striking somebody in the belly. It wasn't expected. It was maybe we lived in our own imagination of these people being normal people and human beings, but it turned out that these people were total beasts and animals and monsters that decided to do it as such. And the atrocities that were done to us, were unimaginable. It was worse than the Holocaust, because even the Germans, the Nazis, did not resort to these means of murdering and torturing people, and especially the woman, what they didn't do to them. One cannot imagine, if you're the worst sadist in the world, you still can't get to where these monsters got to. And I've heard a lot of testimony from the Zaka people, who are good friends of mine as well.
Interrupt you. Zaka people are people here in Israel who go to the scenes of accidents, of murders, of et cetera, and they gather up the body parts and take for burial the victims. And what they saw, what they witnessed, was unimaginable. In fact, you posted a special documentary on your news site, on which I watched, and you saw the testimony of the people who were kidnapped, the people who were at the festival, the Nova Festival, hiding as the terrorists infiltrated Israel, and seeing women raped, tied to trees, viciously raped, and other women that they put things inside of them that I won't go into on the show, but horrid, torturous things. Go ahead.
I didn't know how explicit to be, but it was terrible, terrible thing. In fact, they were even shot dead through the wound places. So you have to understand, also they mutilated the bodies, and it was unbelievable what the Germans never did that.
And they burned people alive because they said that their hands were clenched as they were burning. They were alive. If you're dead and then you're burned, your hands might be loose, but it was clenched up to their in front of them. And horrid, horrid things. And I'm saying this not to upset people. I'm saying this to remind people why we are doing what we are doing, because people have short memories. We have to rid ourselves of these monsters, because, again, I want to remind our listeners, first the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. First the little Satan, and then the big Satan, America. Go ahead, Alan.
And you should know that it's beyond even attacking babies. They murdered and killed babies that were in their cribs, that were in their mother's arms. There was one woman was pregnant, where she had her baby cut out of her. I don't want to be too explicit.
A la Charles Manson,
And I've got the video of it. You can't believe it. It was they filmed it, these monsters, and it was unbelievable what they did. And so this is that's why in my news group I keep on saying, are we keeping the eye on the ball? We have to know why we're going to in Gaza, why we are attacking, why we are fighting, why we are going after these monsters, because we're keeping our eye on the ball. And an expression in golf, basically, keeping your eye on the ball, that you don't lose concentration of what you're doing. And so this is what's been happening from then. Then we've got now in the north coming in Hezbollah. Hezbollah has been very heavily financed by Iran, and they've got believed to be 160,000 rockets, and some of it has high precision guidance systems that could be a big problem to Israel. If and when used, I would say when, but if used. Israel, we went through a terrible time from Gaza, where they fired about 12,000 rockets, and we were mostly bound in our bomb shelters and in our sealed rooms and our secured rooms, and it's both put us the country in at least for a month, 6 weeks. We were totally battened down and couldn't do anything without worrying about the next red alert coming through. And so one has to think about what would happen if Hezbollah would unleash their 160,000 missiles and bigger missiles than Gaza. Gaza missiles were made in the backyard, in the lounge, in the Maqsan, which is a storage area. They made it anywhere they could find a place to lay down materials to assemble these rockets. But these rockets in Hezbollah were made in factories in Iran. If properly precision made it, manufactured missiles that we should know, it's not going to be a game. And I think our establishment in Israel, I think it also is going to get to realize that it's not going to be easy. And I've heard from some sources that, and I've got some very good sources, that there could be an expectation if we had to blow up the Northern Front by having a proper war out there, we could get up to between 5,000 and 10,000 killed in Israel by the rocket fire from there. Because it will overwhelm the Iron Dome system with so many rockets. Those rockets could also be aimed at our airfields and disable the airfields by attacking the runways and whatever. So we won't be able to launch planes to counterattack, to bomb out where the sources of these missiles. And it's not going to be a picnic at all if it did happen.
Right. I just want to say here that the missiles that the Hezbollah have from Iran are much more accurate and much more powerful than even the rockets and missiles that are being sent over from being launched at us from Hamas. And I just want to read out this news report that just came out also, that the Air Force, the Israeli Air Force, is currently striking terror targets in Rafah or Rafiah, depends what language you're speaking, originating from the areas where the rockets were fired towards Kerem Shalom in Israel just before the show aired at 4 p.m. Israel time, around 3 p.m. I think the rocket attacks were approximately that time. And there were at least there were many casualties. We don't know how many or if they're dead yet. No official report has come out yet, and so we're waiting for that. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, you know, I spoke to one of my sources in the establishment, and I said to him, how would I know when the Rafiah campaign started? And he said, with a tremendous amount of air power being launched. And so I think we are starting to see that this Rafiah, after what happened today and the firing of those mortars at the Kerem Shalom checkpoint, that we said that's it. We're not waiting for any more answers from anybody. We're going to dictate the terms. And I think this whole campaign on Ria Fafiach, in my opinion, is starting right now. And I've got friends in the Gaza area, you know, in these communities that have gone back, and they say there's been tremendous amount of bombing going on there. The one woman says, "Habaychli ro'ed, my house is shaking."
Yeah,
it's a bit continuously, and I'm getting reports from as far as Ashkelon in the north of Gaza to the south. There is at the moment a tremendous amount of bombing going on there in that area.
Okay, I just want to add here that for our listeners who are listening in, the amount of bombing has no relative association with how many people are killed, because Israel does mostly targeted bombings and has been trying and has even built a camp of tents and temporary housing for the Gazan population to go to as Israel goes into Rafah, because they're not interested in hitting children or women or anything like that. They want to get Hamas, and I have to make that very specific that you know that. Go ahead, Alan.
Because it would be pointless to have a campaign just to carpet bomb, which is an expression used from Vietnam, but has never been used by Israel or basically any other nation in the world. Oh, mind you, the Second World War also, Britain carpet bombed Germany. But the concept doesn't exist in the Israeli Defense Force or Air Force. We don't attack civilian targets unless there are armed militia within that, I don't call it militia, armed terrorists inside that target area. There's always a reason, and Israel has taken off its gloves. In the past, there was always a consideration of civilians, but if a terrorist leader is sitting with his wife and children, they all go. That's the way it is. You've got to know you're part of it, and we've been taken out. That's why there has been civilian casualties, and those civilian so-called casualties are the people that are families of the terrorists and terrorist leaders. And so they always hide behind their soft targets, the women, the children, but it's no more. They've got no.
Well, Israel has warned everyone to leave. If they don't leave, they are there because they're part of Hamas, and they're not leaving. That's it.
Right. They're given the opportunity to leave, and Hamas, unfortunately, is not allowing them to leave. And so the circumstances are that even though with all what they've been through, there's still tremendous amount of support of Hamas among the Gazan community. And so if you're a collaborator or you're a supporter, you're a target as well. And that's now after this today's incident, which is a very serious incident, that we've taken off the gloves again. We put the gloves back on again. After 7 October, we really took the gloves off and we gave them a real bashing for at least 4 months, 5 months. Then we put the gloves on again slightly and went a bit softer, less bombing and more targeted and exact targeted. But looks like today, I think we're about to take off our gloves again and go full bore. Our big problem there in Rafiah will be that they've had a lot of time now to make
to prepare
booby traps for all our soldiers.
Yeah.
And a ground operation is not going to be easy. Unfortunately, we're going to be expecting a high rate of casualties in the beginning when we fall into booby traps and all that type of thing. But I think the Air Force will lead the way by first bombing a building and then we're going inside to see what's going on and clean up. But even that is dangerous.
Yeah, I want to say something here because I'm telling you, you know, every Israel Independence Day, it's a custom for, you know, Israelis all over Israel to barbecue and to celebrate our independence. But this year, while we're in the middle of a war, because we've been through all of these, mini wars with Hamas before, but we're still in this war right now. We're still being killed. And I just don't feel... I don't feel like we're in a real independent state with the mindset that our prime minister is in that he is listening to the White House, which is anti-Israel. I'm sorry to say, not the American people, but the administration serving in the White House at this time under Joe Biden was just telling Israel, we can't carpet bomb. We have to send our boys into that death trap door to door, which is crazy. Why our prime minister might agree to something like that, because we're a vassal state of the White House, that we are going to listen to them rather than do what's best for our people, for the safety of our sons and daughters that are serving in the IDF, for our citizenry that are living along the border and in the central, because Hamas from Gaza can reach Jerusalem, it can reach Tel Aviv, and has, and even Haifa. So we really need to pray very hard. I'm asking all of our listeners to pray very hard that God gives that our leadership gets the wisdom and the courage to do the right thing and not act like a vassal state and to do what's best for our interests. Because I want to remind everybody, what is best for Israel's interests is best for the world. It's best for your interests, because you do not want these monsters. I mean, if you think, oh, but they raped these young, beautiful Jewish girls, they look at Western women like prostitutes. If you think that what they did here is just going to stay here, they can't wait until they can reach Los Angeles and New York and the university. I mean, these just crazy. What these young people, Queers for Palestine, you see these signs, you're thinking, how are they going to feel? How do you think that the Hamas is going to feel if these people ever went to Gaza and said, I feel gender fluid today? You know, I feel like they're... they'll slice their heads off. They're useless idiots. That's what they are. I'm trying to warn people to keep you safe. Let us do the work here. Support us so it doesn't reach you. We are the canary in the coal mine. And just one more thing. I want to go a little bit off subject now to change the subject. And that is another news item that just happened this afternoon in Israel, Sunday on May 5th, is that Israel has finally passed the Al Jazeera ousting law, basically. We are ousting Al Jazeera from Israel. It's about time. I have to say that I watch Al Jazeera quite frequently, almost every day, actually, because I like to see what the other side is saying. And I'm constantly being beamed, seeing on the screens that's being beamed to me from Al Jazeera, genocide in Gaza. That's what they do. Genocide in Gaza. What kind of genocide in Gaza? Tell me. There is no genocide in Gaza. There is no genocide in Israel. The Arab population in Israel has grown rather than depleted. That is not a genocide. It's the opposite of a genocide. And in Gaza as well, we're doing everything. Israel is doing everything it can in order to minimize deaths and try to get out the Hamas. Israel is doing that, has been doing that. That is not a genocide. It's the opposite. They came in and committed genocide on October 7th, killing men, women, children, babies. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. They wanted to kill and torture and kidnap. Go ahead.
And you should know that the people will not understand the full picture of what would actually happen there. And it's bothersome that so many people in Europe and in America are so oblivious to the truth. But I blame totally 100% on the shoulders of the media. Now, my problem is now, most of the media in America is controlled by Jewish businessmen. And how are they allowing this to happen is beyond my believing, beyond my understanding, that these Jewish-controlled conglomerates, and they control the world, basically, are totally against Israel and against the truth. And it's very, very scary to see what's going on. The influence is maximum. It's absolute. They have influence, and that's why the American average American man in the street is totally ignorant of anything what's going on in the world in terms of honest facts. They really are. It's a problem. It's a major problem. And I don't know how we're going to solve that one. The other thing I wanted to bring to attention is about Iran and the Donald Trump. When Donald Trump was in the White House, he had a tremendous financial sanctions imposed on Iran. Iran was mummish on its knees. They didn't have enough money to feed their people. They couldn't import, they couldn't pay, they had no control of anything what was going on in the country. And if Donald Trump would have stayed in another year, Iran would have been wiped out in terms of economically. And that, because what happened during that time is that they were so strapped for money that they had no money to pay their proxies to continue. Hezbollah had cut back their manpower to half, and Hamas had the same problem, and the Houthis, the Houthim in Yemen also were cut back vastly. They weren't as well financed as they are today, but it killed the terrorist side of things from within our world. And so Iran is looking at the situation now. They've spent billions and billions of dollars on arming the proxies. Hamas is now on its way out. We're about to really take them out and finish the job there. And then we've got Hezbollah on the north. Now, Iran has got a problem now that they've invested all that money into the 160,000 rockets of the best that they've got, and they can't just let it just fall away. Because if Trump comes in November, but by January when he's sworn in, I think the first day he said that we will reimpose all the sanctions on Iran. They'll be totally put onto the ropes within 6 months, and then the all this will fall away. So the question is now, Iran has got basically nothing to lose anymore. And now, well, got everything to lose or nothing to lose. They've got everything to lose, and so if they do not do something with it, they'll lose everything. And they may break out and run for nuclear, which is an option which I do understand is being very, very much thought about in the security establishment. They've been monitored very carefully by our people, and they're only 12 days away from a breakout. That was, if they decide to break out, they got 12 days to get to nuclear. So they're very close, and they're not there yet, but our boys are watching closely, because that would definitely cause Israel to act alone, not with America. America won't do anything. That we would have to damage the plants in Iran. We don't have to eradicate the system. We have to just damage it enough that they can't be able to repair it until Trump gets in, and they won't be able to afford to repair the damage that was done. So that's the one side. Now, Hezbollah may be given the instruction to fire off their missiles, because if and when, I would say, that Donald Trump comes into power and takes over, first of all, the armed forces will be under his control. He's a no-nonsense man. There's no question. There's no one will be able to play games with Israel like Biden is doing with us. And so they may give an instruction to Hezbollah to attack Israel. And maybe, I don't know why we didn't take any major guy out today, yet they're firing a lot of missiles today into northern Israel. I have to speak to some of my news guys and ask them what's their opinion, what's going on. But it seems to be strange that suddenly, when we're all negotiating peace, that there's such a heavy barrage of missiles. Normally also in the Middle East, when just before a ceasefire, each one launches a massive amount of firepower to prove that they won, and they want to show a hesek, an achievement in what they've been fighting, because people always remember what last happened. And so maybe it's a sign there is a peace treaty about to be sought, where we can move Hezbollah 10 kilometers away from the Israeli border and allow our people to go back to their homes. But I think that, in my personal opinion, it would be a good idea to sign an agreement with Hezbollah, because with no war with Hezbollah means we may save that 10 to 20,000 people that may be killed in a missile barrage from the north. And if we can sign an agreement, and then afterwards they'll be taken away anyway by the financial restrictions that Trump would impose, we've saved lives, and we will get back to normal, I think, much quicker.
Well, you know, hopefully, but we've learned, Alan, that signatures on peace treaties and agreements of ceasefires and et cetera, by these Arab terrorist organizations has no meaning, has no value, and I don't trust it. And 10 kilometers is not the answer to push them back. Terrorist organizations need to be eradicated, period.
Absolutely.
That's
it. I believe that there'll be the way I see things is that Trump will come in. He'll impose all the financial restrictions on Iran. Iran will not be able to supply the money and the finances to keep that Hezbollah going. They'll cut back and cut back, and in the end, I would say after a year or 2 years, they'll have more arms than people. The Lebanese government may call in Israel, please come and help us dismantle what there was built here and take away the missiles and destroy them. I think that's what I see coming if we carry on in, on this line of signing an agreement and let history take its course of getting rid of these people from the north. And so that's how I see things on the northern front. If we are allowed to sign this so-called agreement, even it's not going to be a more than 6 months. It's only 6 months away from the American elections. So there's a lot that can happen.
Yeah, there's a lot that can happen. I just want to remind people also, I hear there's a lot of sirens wherever you are.
Yes.
I hope everyone's all right and safe.
On route one.
So that connects Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
All right. You should be safe. I want to say here that Israel. I want to remind all of our listeners that Israel has peace with all of the Arabs. That is all of the Arabs that want peace. And the only Arabs that we don't have peace with are the Arabs that don't want peace. So people need to remember that, and I am hoping that things will turn out well. No one wants to be in war. No one wants to send their children to war here in Israel. We all want to have peace. We've been holding out our hands for peace since the inception of the modern state of Israel, after 2,000 years that God has given us. And we observe Yom HaShoah Sunday evening and Monday this week, we want to prevent anything like that from ever happening again. We want to live in peace. And the only reason that we're fighting right now in Gaza and anywhere else is because we are being attacked by them, as you saw with the attack that just happened briefly before the show. The show went to air today. Go ahead.
And our survival is still at risk. We still haven't survived yet. Until we've beaten this beast, we are still at risk.
And we don't have our kidnapped people back.
Yeah.
They're holding on to men, women, children, babies, and dead bodies that they are not giving us. These are monsters, and no one has checked in them. We have no idea who's alive, who's dead, what situation people are in. Some people have asthma. Some people are sick. They need medicines.
Yes.
We brought over medicines in a deal that we would give them humanitarian aid, and they would give medicines to our people. We have no idea if those medicines ever reached our people even. We have no idea about anything.
No, we do know, because we supplied the medicine before the last release, and the released ones, people that were released, the hostages said they never saw any medicine.
They never saw any medicine. Well, there you go. Okay.
Yep.
So when you deal with terrorists, when you deal with people who are murderers, then you can't expect justice. You can't expect any value to their word. They are murderers. They are the monsters, and you don't make deals with monsters. You eradicate them.
I don't know exactly. I don't know how we can even consider even making a peace deal. I would say that if you want to sign an agreement with them, but then break it, because that's what it's worth. And go after them. We've got to go after them. Even after we sign an agreement, we've got to turn the tables and do the work the way they work.
Yeah, I don't think any agreement's going to be signed, Alan.
No, I really don't,
because the Hamas with our kidnapped, this is their golden key. They don't want to let them go, because this is how they've all got their hands around our necks here in Israel. And there's a big debate here in Israel, Alan. You can talk about that too, between the people who say the hostages are number one, do anything, but we have to get the hostages back, and those who say that we can only get them back if we go in and destroy the Hamas, because they can always steal more people. They can always come in and make more attacks and steal more people. They can also always keep attacking us, and we've got to eradicate, kill the monster, and then you get the hostages. And so this is a big debate. What is number one, to win the war or to get the hostages, our people back? And then I just want to say also, with this humanitarian aid that they're saying Israel has to give humanitarian aid to the Hamas, which is ridiculous. You want humanitarian aid? Give us back our hostages.
Absolutely.
And surrender. And
absolutely,
if you surrender and give us back our hostages, we will give food and water and anything. People can return possibly to their homes, etc. Because, you know, I want to remind people also, when you see some of the destruction in Gaza, they're only showing you the parts that were bombed. They're not showing you all of the other cities and in Gaza and buildings that are still standing there as usual, I should say.
Also,
so don't be deceived.
You've seen that America is very much against the campaign are moving into Rafia. I think that, first of all, Egypt is terrified about what we will discover, that we haven't got roads or tunnels. They've got highways under the Philadelphia route where trucks, massive trucks, will, that they were the stuff that brought in the long-range missiles into
Israel.
Into Israel, showing cooperation
with
by the
Egypt.
Egyptian authorities.
Yes.
And it would be a problem for Egypt to answer answer the hard questions. And so Egypt, being an ally, so to speak, of America, has used their influence and said to America, please don't allow them to go in, because we've got too much at stake. That's what they're calling it, too much at stake. And so America has, in turn, applied pressure on Israel not to do the Rafia thing. Now, today's mortar attack may have a small blessing in that we've now can take with the gloves and we can go in and do what we have to do. With no negotiations, I think the agreement or what they were proposing can be torn up, and we're going to go in now in the next day or two, hammer and tongs. But I think that it'll start off first with a massive air campaign, and then afterwards we'll have to go in. And you know also, I must tell you that when we go in house to house, we're not only looking for terrorists, we're looking also for civilians we're not to touch. It's a dual thing. Our boys were looking for people to pull out, to take out, and out of harm's way so they could go after the terrorists. So it's not only, we're not looking only to find movement and kill. We were there to save lives as well. And we're talking about Gazan lives, Arab lives. And unfortunately, some of our boys paid their lives, with their lives, for saving other some of the Gazan lives. Many times it happened.
Yeah, I don't like that military strategy. I think that we don't have to have any of our boys die anymore.
Right, and, but that's the reality, unfortunately.
Well, you know what? If we act like an independent state that we are, we've got the ruby red slippers. We just have to use them and just say we are not a vassal state of the international community. We will do what is best for our people, which ultimately is best for your people. And that's what we have to do. We need to be the leaders in the world today, because when you look at the leadership today around the world, you look at Joe Biden. You look at the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau. You look at the Prime Minister in England, in the UK, and the Prime Minister or the President in France, etc. They are not the same caliber that Benjamin Netanyahu could be if he wanted to be, if he wanted to stand up, because really he's much more refined and a better leader if he wanted to be, again, I say, if he didn't cower to the pressures of the international community than any of these people are. And Israel is in the right. And if you want to take the moral side, if you want to take God's side, then you've got to support Israel. And remember, everybody, what the Bible says, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. It's not a threat of mine, God forbid. It's just a reality that because the Jewish people stand for all of humanity, we want to see peace around the world. We want to see peace here in Israel as well, of course, and we want goodness for everybody. So,
this is also a thought as I just mentioned to you. You may not agree with me, but you know that looking at the situation the whole world is today, it's a total mess. But on the other hand, we are seeing that most people are saying that are religious and are within religious in learning circles, that we are very close to the times of the Messiah, of Mashiach. And so one has to go back and think, well, how does this all happen? And this happened by the Democrats stealing the election in 2020 from Trump. And we see that maybe that was an act of God, that he needed to take out and expose the evil in the world. And the only way it could be done was by doing it through this terrible act of stealing the democracy of America, of the most democratic country in the world, so to speak. And now we see that everything, if you look back and we see what's been happening the last 4 years, it looks like it's been an act of God all the way. And we are definitely getting closer to Mashiach.
To the Messiah.
and every day. Exposed. We've seen how God has exposed evil with a magnifying glass, that we cannot miss what evil is all about. And on the other hand, we have seen how God has exposed the good of everybody with through a magnifying glass. And it's unbelievable that a person cannot make the wrong decision today. It's not going to be an answer when the times of the Messiah comes, and you'll be asked, do you like this? Do you like that? You won't have an option. You chose the wrong way. You were shown everything clearly, but you still yet went the wrong way or chose the wrong way. And so there's nothing there'll be no excuses. There'll be no lawyers. There'll be nothing. You're on your own.
Because
you
truth will be way. will be not relevant. It will be evident. There's no, you don't need a lawyer, because everything will be revealed, in other words.
Absolutely.
And people need to choose sides right now. That's what I really see happening, that God is letting people choose your side. Are you for me and for morality and for goodness, or are you for Hamas, which is violence, which is theft, which is all of these terrible things? So people need to choose sides. Choose well, people. Choose the good side for peace. Remember who broke the ceasefire. Remember who did these dastardly, terrible atrocities. And remember that you have to get rid of evil. You got to nip it in the bud. Otherwise, if you are kind to the cruel, you end up being cruel to the kind.
Yes, 100%.
All right. Well, Alan, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention also just on the run, and that is that from our discussion, we've seen, I'm appealing to all Americans living in Israel and who are listening wherever you are in throughout the world, that the upcoming elections in America are going to be the most gorali. What is gorali in English?
Fated? Fateful
elections of all of mankind. It's not only for America. And so I'm appealing to everybody to really, if you have the right to vote, to already go and register online to vote, to register, and your vote will be sent to you. And we have to make sure that Donald Trump, or whoever will represent the Republican Party, will be in power from November the 7th is the elections, and from the 19th of January, the swearing-in ceremony. If I might just mention to people, you can go to a site, it's fvap.gov. It's very simple, G-O-V. You go there, you look for your town or your county, and you register there. It'll give you all the details. It's very easy to follow, and you leave your email address, and they will send you your ballot via email, this is the way to do your bit for the, not only for America, not only for Israel, but for the whole world. But we must make sure that Israel is going to get through this clearly, and we need to have Donald Trump or any other Republican who will be representing America in the next 4 years.
Alan Silver, you know, God can do anything, even if a Democratic anti-Israel person is voted in.
Yes.
If God wants it to happen, it's going to happen. If it doesn't, it doesn't. What we need to do is to change our ways and become better people.
Right.
I'm not going to put my eggs in the basket. I appreciate Donald Trump and all he did, but I'm not putting my hopes on him to be the Messiah and save the world. I hope he does good for America, because the American people are very good people. And what's good for America is also good for the world. But again, for Israel, remember, those who bless Israel will be blessed. Those who curse Israel will be cursed.
But you should not just mention that. I think the person to fix this all up would be Donald Trump.
One needs
a bull in a china shop, and he is a bull in a china shop.
Well, could be.
And he would be able to drain the swamp, get rid of all the things that had to be done by this past administration, and then the next 4 years afterwards, DeSantis or any of the other good people out there will be able to build great on what thing. We need a bulldozer first to destroy what's been created in the last four
years. And I do appreciate Donald Trump. I do appreciate him. All I'm saying is that I'm not relying on him. I'm relying on God. That's all. Okay, with appreciation to him.
Yes.
Okay, Alan Silver, I want to thank you so much for being with us here on Israel News Talk Radio, and thank you for your news reports. And again, if anybody wants to join his WhatsApp news group, I'll try to put a link down there if that's possible. If not, you can write in at Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and I will send you that link if I can. Thank you. Alan Silver.
Thank you. All the best to you. And also, you also deserve many, many blessings on the holy work that you do, you and your whole organization. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan Silver, and thank you to all of our listeners. And may we all have peace and safety and goodness in our lives.
Amen.
Thank you.
Amen. Bye, man.
You think you can get real news about Israel from major news sources located far away from Israel? Think again. Get it from the source. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from
Israel. Be smart. Listen to Israel News Talk Radio in the background while you work and get the latest news and commentary from Israel. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.
Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.